Government Innovation and Veterans will be in order. Today is Wednesday, March 28, 2012. Just want to let everyone in the audience know you'll see some members coming in and out. There's three or four committees going at the same time today, but we do have a quorum here as members have checked in. So we're going to move forward with the first bill on the agenda, which will be Senate File 1832.
I guess that's one.
Senate File 1832, Senator Perry's Help America Vote Act Appropriation Authorization. Senator Perry.
Well, thank you very much, members, Mr. Chairman and committee. What we have here is the Secretary of State's Help America Vote Act in front of you, which has the following amounts are appropriated in fiscal year. Those amounts. And I think with respect to the Secretary of State, I will offer the A1 amendment. The Secretary of State, Richie, has come to me and believes he'd like to see us to restore fully the $1.425 million into this bill, and maybe I could have the Secretary join me. And so I would offer the A1 amendment.
All right. Thank you, Senator Perry. Welcome to the committee. I'm sorry, Senator Perry, just to bring this to everyone's attention, it is the A2 amendment, members.
Excuse me. Thank you very much. Then I would offer the A2 amendment.
Just to follow all the right steps, would you be willing to withdraw
I would withdraw the A1 amendment.
Okay.
And offer the A2 amendment.
On the first part of that, members, do we need to vote on that?
Yeah.
Senator Perry's withdrawal of the A1? No.
I thought you were offering the A2.
All those in favor of the A2? Well, let's talk about it first before we do this. And let's have Secretary of State Richie provide some of his thoughts and comments on it. Welcome. Welcome to the committee. Good morning.
My name is Mark Ritchie. I'm honored to serve with you as Secretary of State. The Senate last year in your full meeting authorized our 2 years of HABA funds, which are used primarily to support our local election officials in the conduct of our elections, everything from the statewide voter database to the matching with corrections and courts and all the things that we do to maintain the system. In the final negotiations in the summer, half of the funds this current fiscal year's were allocated. The second half were put off for this year's consideration. There is a little more than $1.8 million in the total account. We're asking for the appropriation of $1.425 to complete these tasks. It's everything from making sure we're in compliance with our federal obligations for military and overseas voters, support for our local officials, and it includes the efforts to make sure that all of our voter data is verified according to all the different available databases to us that we have. This appropriation is especially important because this is the biggest election year we've had up until now, and second, because it's, of course, a year for redistricting, which we're in the middle of completing that process. So thank you again, and thank you very much, Senator Perry, for carrying this legislation.
Senator Perry.
Mr. Chair, I just want to bring the members up to date. We appeared before Local Gov last week, and what you have before you in Senate File 1832 is what came out of local government. Wanted to let you know that in that committee, they felt the need to hold back, I believe, $1.2 million for the implementing of voter identification if it were to pass. I can also just update you. I believe it's in Ways and Means today in the House. I do know Representative Lanning had moved forward $1,080,000, with $100,000 of it being appropriated and used only for costs associated with implementation of laws enacted in 2012 dealing with election administration procedures for individuals who have been convicted of a felony. I know there's a lot of discussion about what to do, and I leave it up to the committee because we need to vet this. But I just wanted to bring you up to date on what had happened, not only in local government, but also in the House.
Senator Perry, Secretary of State Ritchie, can you help us understand this delete all amendment and the background, why the changes from the bill as it was introduced? I'm looking at the first and gross one, actually, and then this amendment?
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, I think, Secretary Ritchie had come to me and felt the need to have the 1.425, and I said that I'd bring this amendment forward and let the committee discuss their thoughts again. Just give you what has happened in the other committees and bring it forward that way.
Thank you, Senator Perry. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Perry. That's my concern about this, too. I appreciate Secretary Ritchie, your desire to bring some of that back, but I think I see it as inevitable that voter ID, well, optimistically inevitable that photo ID for voting is going to happen, and so I cannot support this amendment because I think it's prudent that we have those resources available next year.
Secretary Ritchie.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazelka. I believe these are two separate issues. The estimates on the constitutional amendment is around $40 million, and so quite a bit of money will be needed. But these funds are to implement what is the regular standard procedures for conducting statewide elections, including all the database work that local election officials depend on. We normally get between 1.2 and 1.3 million, but this is a big year because it's redistricting. So this is taking a fourth of our agency's budget out of our budget. And this is money that is necessary to have elections run smoothly and support the local election officials who run those elections this year. Mixing these two issues, I believe, both makes it impossible to conduct what we need to do in a regular election year and confuses what will be needed if that constitutional amendment passes, which is a significant pool of money. We discussed early on, should the 1.4 million come from general funds? That didn't seem like a reasonable idea this year. And the Help America Vote Act plan that we have had been approved for about 10 years now, this is what it's for each and every year. So while I appreciate the problem of figuring out the financing in the future, my particular problem is making sure we can run efficient and well-run, well-managed elections in a regular but very big election year with redistricting on top of it. This is a fourth of our agency's budget, so it's important, and it's the middle of the year.
Thank you, Secretary Ritchie. Senator Perry, I'm going to ask again, just because I still don't understand the difference between the first engrossment of Senate File 1832 and this amendment. It looks like the total dollar amount is almost the same. In B, 1.2 million versus the 1.425 million in the amendment, is it the difference of $225,000 between the 1.2 million and the 1.425? Is that the substantial difference between these two? Senator Perry.
The difference is, Mr. Chairman, is the $1.2 million is appropriated for fiscal year 2013.
And in the amendment?
In the amendment, this appropriates 1.425 all now.
2012?
Correct.
Okay.
Wait a minute, Mr. Chair.
Senator Perry.
Beth is going to correct us. I thought that was the way it is, but let's
Welcome to the committee. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Beth Fraser with the Office of the Secretary of State. The primary difference between the first and Grossman in this amendment is the $1.2 million is dedicated exclusively for implementing the constitutional amendment were it to pass. And so it appropriates the same amount of money but says $1.2 million may not be spent for any of the things that we really need it to be spent on between now and the presidential election.
Thanks, Senator Perry. Thank you. Looks like we're having some side discussions. I'm close to moving to a vote. Is there anyone else here that would like to testify to the 8-2 amendment before we move to a vote? Members, any other discussion, any other questions? Okay. On the 8-2 amendment, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
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 The motion does not pass. So back to the bill. Senator Perry.
Well, we have in front of you then the bill as it was brought forward. I would move Senate File 1832 be recommended pass and sent to the floor.
All members, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Perry. Members, we'll move to the second item on the agenda. That is Senate File 2328, Senator Vandeveer's Military Pay Differential Law Modification for School District Employees. Senator Vandeveer, good morning and welcome to the committee. Thank you, Senator Vandeveer. Welcome to the committee. Good morning, sir. You could state your name for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs, and I'm here to testify in support of this bill. We feel it's very important because right now we see this as something of a loophole in that a school district may actually see a windfall from deploying teachers because they may be able to replace them for the year that they're deployed with a lower salary teacher substitute, leaving more money in the district's budget. The challenge that we get to, and the reason that the differential pay law was passed, was to ensure that teachers, when they deployed, did not suffer a cut in pay because of their military service. The challenge is, the lower you are in the totem pole, if you will, from a teaching perspective, the more likely you are that your substitute will cost so much that there will be no money left for the school district to pay the differential to you. By allowing pooling, that any money saved for a more senior teacher who probably is more senior in the military and will not be eligible for differential pay, though the school district may replace them with a lower paid substitute and would have a cost savings. This would allow them or force them, depending on how you look at it, to use them that money that they save to pay the differential to ensure that that lower paid teacher does not lose money as part of this performance. And that's where we see this as being a very good thing. It really does protect those that need to be most protected based on the intent of the law provision.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr. Are there any other members in the audience who would like to testify either in support or in opposition? Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, my name is Snejana Desma, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association. And we do want to thank Senator Benninger for bringing forward this proposal and thank all of our military out there who do a wonderful job and certainly want them to be compensated well. As far as school boards perspective, I think our only concern is with how this would roll out once, and I can distribute what we currently have and give out to our member districts. And this is kind of goes through the process of how we how the school district would figure out that, you know, what's the differential we want to, you know, could afford to pay. And so there's four different scenarios as far as how that could roll out, and they're quite different. So this is, when this happens, this is not, you know, one-fits-all approach. It's very much case by case. So our concern is with, you know, the language specifically, pay in proportionate amounts on line 3.14, is what is that proportionate amount? We need to define that so that we can do a better job and, you know, don't have to deal with as many demons as it will have coming. So, because we do have on lines 0.124 and 2.9 a very prescriptive, I suppose, approach in how we figure out the differential, but we don't have anything like that how we distribute it, because some teachers or school employees will have, you know, have different amounts coming to them. So how do we figure that out? And that's most likely some of them will receive less now than they would have received under current law. So we just want to make sure that it's, you know, it's up to your legislative body to figure this out, and for us to be able to implement it, we want to make sure that we have the tools and the definitions to be able to do that well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Senator Vandeveer or Mr. Kerr, do you have any thoughts in response to that? And a related question is, have you worked with all the different stakeholders to have those kinds of discussions to ensure that there aren't any unintended consequences of implementing this?
And Mr. Chair, members, in discussing this with the House author, it was my understanding that there was no testimony against the bill in that committee. And no one's approached me with this issue until last night. We're certainly willing to work with the school board to, you know, come up with more prescriptive language if they would prefer. I also have to inform you that it's designed this way for the purpose of allowing them as much flexibility as possible to implement. So we could work with them if they'd like more prescriptive language between here and the floor.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Senator Vandeveer. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Kirk, have there been, obviously there are a lot of school districts in Minnesota, have there been situations where folks under deployment have come back and where the pay differential has been such where there has been a negative impact?
Mr. Kirk.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator. Yes, I do know of one. In fact, I spoke to this individual yesterday. It's fairly unusual because I believe most of our military members or teachers are probably making more money in their military service, but that's not always the case. And there's one incident yesterday that I talked to an individual who was a member of the Air Force Reserve and actually did not receive the full amount of his differential because his teaching salary was quite substantial, and the substitute, the savings that the school had from the hiring substitute were not sufficient to cover the difference in his pay from his teaching salary down to his military.
Senator Cohen.
And Mr. Sherman, this might be then more of a hypothetical. I think the legislation involves all employees of the school district. Is that not correct? So if you have somebody who's, say, a custodian, or somebody in maintenance or in the service of the school who's not at the level of a teacher, then that person's pay, you assume, would be at an amount probably under the teacher and might be more at risk. Would that... I don't know if that's a fair hypothetical or not in terms of what you're trying to...
Mr. Kirsch.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senator, I believe that you're correct that there likely are other employees who will have a differential pay situation created, but that already exists in current law. This really just allows the school district to use any savings they have from the higher paid employees to actually pay the differential as opposed to isolating that pay to the one individual circumstance.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, let me just ask one further question relative to the School Board Association. I understand the concern in maybe a hypothetical, but have there been problems within individual school districts with what's being done presently? Or would you, maybe the question is better asked. Prospectively, do you anticipate problems within a school district if this legislation passes? Because it sounds like it would be a fairly unique situation, would offer some protection to a handful of people and wouldn't be widespread throughout the school district. So I'm just wondering about the size of the problem potentially.
Mr. Chair, I'm not exactly sure what the problem would be. The problem that we could see is that if there were more employees, and then in giving up the money, what percentage, or is the percentage base, or what is a portion it needs as far as, because most likely, if you look at the charts here, it could vary, vary a lot, how much they have coming and how much, they even sometimes are able to receive, because it's not, Mr. Carson? Said that sometimes the substitute costs a lot more money than we hoped for. So I think the problem would be grievances and folks coming up and saying, I should have seen more, why did you receive this much? So that's what potential we're anticipating, so we're just asking for clear definition of those words on how we are allocating those funds.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, just one other comment. I can appreciate the concern of the School Board Association. My guess is that listening to both witnesses, that the reality is that at least insofar as the current deployments are concerned, Iraq and Afghanistan, this legislature doesn't control what takes place at a national level. But the expectation is, and the expectation, no matter who becomes president next year, that the military involvement of the United States is going to diminish significantly. And so at least insofar as these deployments are concerned, it sounds like it's, if there was a concern for the School Board Association, in terms of actual numbers, it's going to be pretty minimal. And my concern would be, I'm not sure what the right language is, and obviously this committee is, Your memorandum or explanation is in some detail. It would take a couple minutes to absorb. But if we find that, as Mr. Kerr suggests, there's one person, two, just there's a handful of people, the impact is going to be minimal in the school district, but it's going to be major on that serviceman. And if we, I mean, who knows? Maybe there'll be war with Iran in 3 years, and we'll have larger deployments. But at least given where we are right now, it would seem to me that it's going to be more minimal from the School District Association. I could reprise my speech, Mr. Chairman, from Friday night on the voter ID bill when I suggested if one person is prohibited from voting, that would be terrible. And so in this instance, to be consistent, if there's one serviceman who's been deployed and finds himself or herself at coming back at some more difficult situation, that's unfair to that serviceman.
Thank you, Senator Cohen. I won't even editorialize about how things look between us and Iran, but I will ask Ms. Snezhana if you have proposed language to provide us with maybe perhaps a more clear definition that you're looking for. Is that something that's in the works?
No, Mr. Chair, members. At this time, I don't have a proposed language. And I think that the part of it is the legislature came up with, you know, the breakdown.
Senator Vandeveer has. Senator Vandeveer has clearly indicated his interest in doing that. If you are so interested, it sounds like both parties are willing to work on this. At this point, members, I don't think there are any more questions. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that Senate File 2328 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
All those in favor, indicate
aye.
By saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Vandeveer.
Chair members, thank you very much.
All right, members, the third item on the agenda are the confirmations to the Minnesota Boards of our Board of Arts. We have 8 board members to consider for the Board of Arts, and it is my understanding with the time slot, not all were able to attend this morning. There is someone here to either speak for themselves or for those that could not attend. After we have heard from each member, we can take a vote on their confirmations. Just as a reminder, we have 3 options for confirmations: to pass with committee recommendation, to pass without recommendation, and to take no action. We're going to give 2 or 3 minutes to each person, each board member. We'll start with Anton Troyer, or someone here to speak on behalf of Anton Troyer. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, could I just suggest?
Yes.
We've got 3 boards to confirm, and we have multiple meetings going on. Obviously, we have to confirm each person individually, but maybe with each of the separate boards, we could have the several people from each board just come up to the table at the same time and then go down the individuals just to save a couple of minutes. And then call everybody up individually.
I'm certainly open to that, members. Is that agreeable? Okay, sounds good. Good suggestion. Mr. John Gunyu, Sean Dowse. Thank you. Good morning, members. And if you could please proceed.
Senator Bailey, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Ellen McGinnis, and I serve as the current chair of the Minnesota State Arts Board. With me today are my colleagues, Mike Jerome from Monona and Sean Dowse from Radley. As you heard or know, a number of our members were unable to be here because of the change of the time of the meeting. So if I may make a further suggestion, I think it would be acceptable to the committee. I might make a few remarks regarding my own appointment. I would ask my colleagues to do the same, and then I would come back and just give you a very brief review of the members who would not be here today.
That sounds good. That's a great idea.
Great. Thank you. Again, my name is Alan McGinnis. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I understand you have my resume and my appointment material, so I will be brief. I think it would be important for you to know that I was first appointed to the Arts Board by Governor Valenti in 2004, reappointed by Governor Valenti in 2008, and I would be honored to have your support of my nomination again this year for reappointment to the Minnesota State Arts Board. In a time of great economic challenge, I think our Arts Board's responsibility has never been greater than to use state funding wisely. Minnesota's arts community is an industry that provides thousands of jobs and generates millions of dollars of economic activity in our state. The arts are an integral part of our economy and quality of life. As a business person, in my day job, I work for Wells Fargo. As a business person, I believe the arts are critical to our state's ability to attract and retain both jobs now and into the future. Again, as a volunteer on the board, this position has truly been a labor of love for me. I'm a lifelong arts consumer and advocate, a graduate of the University of Minnesota in political science, the former executive director of Minnesota Citizens for the Arts, and I currently manage Twin Cities Global Government Relations Activities for Wells Fargo. I believe I'm well suited to serve on the board. I'd be honored to continue in that service, and I appreciate your support and consideration today. With that, I will turn it over to my colleague, Mr. Chairman, if that's okay, Mr. Sean Bells.
Thank you, Ms. McGinnis. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Sean Bells. I'm from Red Wing, Minnesota. I have been appointed to the Minnesota State Arts Board by Governor Dayton in 2011. Privilege, I consider a high privilege to serve on this board, and respectfully ask for the confirmation of my appointment. I have served as the executive director of Shelton Theater in Red Wing for about 24 years. In this time, we present about 100 events every year to the citizens of Red Wing and the region of Southeast Minnesota. It is critical that we have received over the past 20 years or so support from the Minnesota State Arts Board in bringing arts to the citizens of Southeast Minnesota. Without the support of the Minnesota State Arts Board, we could not attain the level of quality of arts experiences for the citizens in that area. Simply put, we couldn't bring folks in from all of the state performances at the Shelton Theater, nor did we attain the level of quality of arts for our local creators, like kids from the local school districts, who get on our stage every year and put on very, very high-quality shows for the people of Red Wing. So this is critical important that the State Arts Board maintain its commitment to access for all citizens of Minnesota to all the arts in Minnesota. So respectfully submit that. Help me do this great work at the State Arts Board.
Thank you very much.
Sharon. Mr. Chairman, I would like to next introduce my colleague, Mr. Mike Shirol, from Winona.
All right. Thank you very much. Welcome. State your name for the committee.
Mike Shirol. I come from Winona. I represent the 1st Congressional District on the Minnesota State Arts Board. I was first appointed by Governor Valenti in 2008, and I have been honored to have been reappointed by Governor Dayton to serve another 4 years. I think you have your resumes before you. I've had the great privilege of serving with many of you, former constituent, now a senator. Senator Gazelta, congratulations on making it to the upper chamber. You can see from my resume that I have a long record of in the arts, but also in public service, serving on several different commissions and appointed to several boards. In telecommunications, in the arts, on both the national and the state level, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to serve our state in capacity and to continue to keep vital a $1 billion industry in the state.
Thank you very much. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Chiron. I mean, I just want to confirm that you were in the House a real advocate for the arts. For the life of me, I can't figure out how you got the Honeycrisp Apple bill through, but beyond that, you were frankly very a strong advocate for the arts, and I certainly would recommend it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pastrana, I so appreciate the mention of the Honeycrisp Apple, for which I have taken some wonderful ribbing from my colleagues from the years. And I must defend myself a little in that when a fourth grade class brings something to you, and you can bring fourth graders in to have it actually get a hearing, to bring these students who are studying government in to be able to testify before a Senate and a House committee, to be able to actually be present when the bill, much to my surprise, got a hearing on the floor and was able to pass, and then to bring the governor to their school to sign the bill was one of the greatest joys I've ever had as an educator. So I accept the giving with the spirit of it.
Thank you very much. Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I would also like to mention that Mr. Chiron is a fresh, crisp Sprite individual who adds to the Arts Council, and I would be glad to pass my support to him also.
All right. Thank you very much. Ms. McGinnis?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there are members that cannot make it here today, and so if I could just take a few moments to... I know you have their resumes and their applications, but maybe just spend a few minutes providing their name and a quick background for each for the record. Mayor Ardell Reed, Mayor of Rochester since 2003. He's a very passionate advocate for the arts in the city of Rochester. He's involved in the U.S. Conference of Mayors. He has in the League of Cities for 33 plus years as a healthcare administrator at Mayo Clinic. This is his day job. Mr. John Gagne, who's the city administrator of Minnetonka. He's the budget director, was formerly the budget director of the city of Minneapolis. He served as the commissioner of finance for Governor Ernest Carlson. He, too, is passionate about the arts, and many of his children actually work professionally in the field. Benjamin Flipko from Alexandria, I believe. Is the newest and youngest member of our board. He represents, in our view, the next generation. We're glad to have him. He works in the college and community theater world as an administrator, producer, director, actor, set designer. He's very interested in web and technology. I believe he does that also as a consultant. Two more to go. Mr. Anton Troyer, Professor Anton Troyer, who's one of the country's foremost scholars on Ojibwe language and culture. He teaches at Bemidji State University. He publishes the only Ojibwe academic journal in the nation. He has published eight books, countless articles, and has taught in a number of institutions and settings, and is the winner of 30 awards or fellowships. Lastly, my colleague, Pam Perry, who some of you may know from her day job as president of the Minnesota Builders Association. She was first appointed to the state art board by Governor Ventura, then by Governor Pelletti. And now by Governor Bacon, former director of Minnesota Citizens for the Arts, served as our board chair two times, and again, this would be her third time if confirmed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to speak in favor of Professor Troyer from Bemidji State. I think Professor Troyer would bring a unique talent to the board as a Native American and I think some of the wonderful Ojibwe art and the language. I just think that was a tremendous pick by Governor Dayton for the 8th Congressional District, and I would just like to speak in favor of Professor Troyer.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just underscore also all the people who serve as volunteers, and we're particularly grateful for those that come from great distances to participate in the State Arts Board. It really speaks to their commitment, but we all serve as volunteers on this board. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Further discussion? Senator Cohen?
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of comments. First, I would note that Governor Dayton's proposed nominees are a mixture. We've got three people who were originally appointed by Governor Plenty, and I think we have a combination in terms of party preference of Republicans, Democrats, Independents, probably outweighed by Independents. So it's certainly a mixture. Obviously, by statute, some of it has to be geographic, but there's also a mixture in terms of gubernatorial appointees as well as partisan background. The second comment I make is just, if I can, and I know not everybody who's proposed for confirmation, but most of the folks, and can join in with other members in attesting to their qualifications. But I do want to point out that with the legacy amendment money, that obviously the groups affected, the Arts Board, the Lessard-Sams Commission, there's some significant new dollars. And I think members have probably read some of the newspaper stories. There also have been, I think, some television accounts of not illegal or, types of situations, embezzlement of public funds, but some concerns expressed with all this new money as to whether or not the granting organizations are doing it correctly. I don't think I've seen a single word mentioned in criticism of the State Arts Board relative to their granting process. So when we've seen some of the stories, and it's not my purpose to get into that, but we've seen stories about concerns about how some of the monies have been handled, there's not been a single word of criticism of the State Arts Board and how they've handled this influx of money from the Legacy Amendment. The second thing I'd add to that is if there's been any criticism, I think there's been a little bit of criticism coming from the arts community because the State Arts Board has been too exacting in how they've handled the money. That's, I think, the only criticism I would note. It's not been a major criticism, but a concern that the Arts Board is requiring the proposed grantees to go through a lot of hoops to get the money.
Further discussions? I can see there'll be a new crispness to the Arts Board. Mr. Chair. Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, before I go to Senator Daley, the intent here, if it's okay with the members, is that we move them all at one time rather than to go individually. Is that okay? Okay. Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to recommend the confirmations of Anton Troyer, John Gunyu, Sean Dowse, Michael Sharon, Ellen McGinnis, Benjamin Klipfel, Ardell Brady, and Pam Perry as Minnesota Arts Board members to the full Senate.
Any further discussion on that motion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. All right, let's move on to the fourth item on the agenda, are the confirmations of the Minnesota Racing Commissions. If we could get the three that are here, to come on up at the same time. How appropriate we would follow with the Racing Commissions because, as I understand it, horses like apples.
Oh.
They might prefer Honey Crisp.
You get right to the core, Mr. Sherman.
Thank goodness it wasn't a seedless comment. Let's see. Please introduce yourself and you may proceed.
Chairman, I'm Dick Kruger. I'm the executive director of the commission. We have three commissioners present today. Commissioner Dan Earhart, Commissioner Dan Rowe, and Dr. Neil Carter. Commissioner Mark Urista is unable to attend this morning because of a prior business commitment, but I can give you a brief profile of him in addition to the resume that you
Thank you very much. If you would like to start, sir, state your name for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dan Earhart, and I'm a county commissioner in Anoka County, and have been a county commissioner since 1983. I was appointed to the Racing Commission by the Governor's State Commissioner in July of 2011. And just real briefly, I have a resume here, which I believe was sent to you earlier.
Correct.
If somebody wants to look at it. My brief background is born and raised on a farm, where horses were part of the operation early on. And then I have a degree from the University of Minnesota in agriculture. I have been involved in several businesses, very small, medium-sized, and very large. And I run my own business, and I'm particularly interested in the coin business and its health for the state of Minnesota. I am concerned and very supportive of building a strong equine business in Minnesota, and horse racing at Canterbury and running aces is an important part of the operation. I respectfully ask that I be confirmed as a member of the race committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Excuse me, my name is Dave Rowe. I'm a retired carpenter. I was appointed by Governor Dayton to this position, and I think one of the great honors that you can have in any place is to serve your state. I had an opportunity to serve, but started with regards to the Racing Commission, upholding the integrity of racing, and the state publicly. Confidence and the work of the great staff of the commission. And I'm here for your confirmation, and when we finish that, I would hope that you would give me 45 seconds on an educational matter that I'd like to stay here, because I don't have an opportunity to get to the Capitol very often like I used to. And what I have is hopefully supported by my good friend Senator Olson, who's got a long, long time. If you think 35 years is a long time.
All right. Thank you very much. Please state your name for the record.
I'm Camille McCarroll. I have been involved with horse racing in one facility, one way or another, for almost 50 years. Agriculture background, a veterinary degree. Immediately went into the horse racing industry in a regulatory position, and was recruited here to Minnesota prior to the start of racing in 1985 from Florida. The only thing that would convince me to move from Florida to Minnesota was the opportunity to create a racing program that did not have or permit the kinds of problems that I saw in other states, and was given that opportunity, and very, very proud of the racing that has been developed here in the state. I think it's the cleanest and the best run in the country. In 1993, when racing took a hiatus, I resigned from my position on Minnesota Racing Commission staff and was rather immediately appointed to a commission position by Governor Perpich, and I've served on the commission ever since, trying to protect the rights of the horses and the people that own them, the people that ride them, the people that love them, and to make sure that this racing continues as clean as it started. And I would appreciate being reappointed so I can keep on the good fight.
All right, thank you. Any questions from the committee? Again, committee, I would like to move all of these appointments at the same time, if that's okay with the committee. All right, Senator Olson.
Yes, I'm honored to make the motion that the Senate recommend, or send this committee recommend to the full Senate the confirmation of all of these reappointees and Camille McArdle, Dan Earhart, David Rowe, and Mark Arista.
Any further comments? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
And I hope you will honor Mr. Rowe's...
I was just going to say, Mr. Rowe, the floor is yours right now.
This is basically for maybe the Education Committee, but I will have an opportunity to speak to them. I had the privilege of serving on the Board of Regents for 12 years. It was a great, great honor. And I might state that during that particular time, each budget was approved, but I never voted for the budget because it had tuition increases. And as a protest, what are we going to do with respect to tuition for young people and others to come into to this? And the other is, again, to state my disappointment that... a great farm school in Waseca had to be closed and turned into a federal prison. That's bothered me ever since I left the Board of Regents, and I appreciate you giving me this opportunity and to say again hi to my good friend, loyal friend, Senator Olson.
Mr. Senator Olson.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Rowe. I appreciate it. I was here when you were elected to the Board of Regents, but we had conversations from the very beginning because of our common commitment to vocational technical education, now career and technical education, and concern that that not be lost in the shuffle. And we're back at it. We're still attempting to build that bridge between K-12 and our colleges for jobs that are good paying jobs that are going unfilled because we're not making some of those connections. So you have come to mind many times because of your commitment. I think we got acquainted even before I was in the legislature because of the work in that area. But I appreciate your longstanding commitment to education and to everything you do, and you do it well. So
you're very kind. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You. Thank you very much, Mr. Rowe, and for one who lives in Waseca, there isn't a day that goes by that I'm not reminded about the decision of closing that facility down there. But thank you very much. We're going to move on to the fifth item on the agenda, which are the confirmations to the Minnesota Gambling Board. Again, as many as we can get up to the table, please come up to the table. Thank you very much, sir.
Two of the members up for confirmation could not make it. Fire Chief Gary Sinfrenius from Forest Lake is on high alert for understandable reasons, local fire situation. And then Susan McArdle, a hockey mom, former hockey mom out of Hopkins, could also not make it, but certainly extends their appreciation for the consideration. I'd be happy to answer any background questions pertaining to those two. But we do have Bill Gillespie, Glenn Kent, and Gino Fragnino before you. All board members, I'm very privileged to serve with these board members. Each one brings a very unique background to the industry to keep an eye on, and happy to turn it over to the board members.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Barrett. If you'd like to proceed, sir, with your name and a few comments.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Bill Gillespie, and I am presently a member of the Gambling Control Board. I serve as Secretary, member of this executive committee, also a member of the complaint resolution group, which hears complaints and violations of rules and statutes by participants in the shareholder gambling. And I'm also a member of the executive committee Adobe, and then I listen to their appeal. I have a resume that I dropped at each of your offices. Just a quick highlight, since I see it's not really in the packet here. I have a degree in clinical psychology, a master's degree in public safety administration, and I'm a graduate of the University of Northwestern's Police Staff and Command School. Police officer for 26 years for the city of St. Paul, and I was worked also in public, private, and nonprofit organizations. Larson Holding Company as an administrator, and then the executive director of the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association. I would be remiss if I didn't say that I ask for your support for reappointment to the Camden Control Board, but I thank you for this opportunity to speak before you. May I be happy to stand for any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Gillespie. Please state your name.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Norman Kent. I live in rural area of McRae, Minnesota, District 25B. And I was first appointed by then Commissioner Campion, a public safety commissioner, to this position in 2007. I've been reappointed by Commissioner Dolan last year for this position. You have my resume. I just quickly say that I think one of the reasons that I feel this is an important job, that I have the experiences. I was with the Department of Public Safety Alcohol Gambling Enforcement Division for 17 years. So and I began in 1989, so I kind of witnessed the expansion of gambling and the regulation of gambling for the last 20-some years within the state. And you have my resume, and I'll keep it brief.
Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I'm Gino Fragnito. I'm also a member of the Gambling Control Board. I was appointed back in 2010 by Governor Valenti, who has background on me. I'm resident of Woodbury, a constituent of Senator Lilly, and by way of a native Iron Ranger, have lived in the Twin Cities for quite a while. My interest in serving on the Charitable Gambling Board comes from interest in making sure that the charities that are providing the good work to the communities they serve are actually able to continue to provide those services for the benefit of all who receive them. My comments are brief.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? Again, for the committee, I would like to see all of these moved at one time, if that's all right with the committee. All right, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've had the privilege to work with Mr. Barrett on a number of occasions on things that came up in my district, and so, and I can speak to Mr. Barrett's integrity, and if these people are all okay with Mr. Barrett, they're all okay with me. So I would move, Mr. Chair, that we recommend the confirmations of Norman Pint, William Gillespie, Gary Sigfrenius, Gino Fragnito, and Susan McCarville to the Gambling Control Board.
Any further discussion? Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if this will be the appropriate time, but I know Senator Olson had asked Mr. Rowe to speak briefly about some concerns relative to higher education.
No, I didn't. He requested to speak.
Okay, and so So appreciate the chance to hear Mr. Rowe talk about something he'd been very involved in. I know it's the presence of Mr. Wilson, who obviously has some interest in the Gambling Control Board. Maybe he'd like to talk to us afterwards about the Vikings and offer that perspective to us. Or a stadium on the Vikings.
All those in favor of the Carlson motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oh, same sign. Motion prevailed.
Thank you
very much. One final item.
Mr. Chairman, this is probably the only committee Mr. Wilson could show up that he's been appearing at that doesn't deal with Viking Stadium. So. I didn't want him to feel lonely in that regard.
One final thing. I'd like to, the first bill, Senate File 1832, I'd like to bring it, move to, well, before I do that, we sent it to the wrong place. It needs to go to finance, and we sent it to the floor. So what I'd like to do is bring it back and just readdress and send it to finance. Senator Cohen.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'd move that Senate File 1832 be reconsidered.
And sent to finance.
No,
I think it'd be two separate motions.
Reconsider and get it back on the table.
Oh, okay, okay. All right.
So I move that Senate File 1832 be reconsidered and be replaced on the agenda.
To that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
So, Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 1832 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
To that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Cohen. Being there's no further business before this committee, do we have a tentative schedule? Unless something comes up, I think we're completed, right? There being no further business before the committee, it is adjourned.
Have we finished all the confirmations then?
We did.
We did.